Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome back to Circles of Change. And, you know, there's so many wonderful opportunities for me to, the word circle, to circle back. And indeed, that's what I'm doing, because it's a pleasure to invite on the show again Laura Vanderkam from New York City. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Well, Laura was with us almost 2 years ago to talk about her first book at the time, which was called Grind Hopping, Building a Rewarding Career Without Paying Your Dues. And at that time, she had one young son, and between she and her husband, they were keeping her busy. So now we're catching her 2 years later with her second book and also second child in the mix, right?
Exactly. It's funny because I turned in the manuscript 11 days after the second kid was born, so I really do think of them as the two babies that were at the same time.
Well, my God. And so you must have been proofreading it and doing things in the hospital after giving birth?
Pretty much. I mean, you know, people laugh about that. They say, you know, you're trying to be a time management guru here, and you're turning in your book right after having a baby. But, I kind of knew they were both coming, I guess.
At the same time, yeah.
I had to plan ahead.
Well, let me give a brief introduction to Laura. She writes a column regularly for USA Today as a member of the nation's paper's Board of Contributors. She's also a contributing editor at Reader's Digest, writes often a weekly column for Scientific American website, for the Huffington Post, and you can find her byline also in the Wall Street Journal. She's thus a prolific writer on very diverse subjects. In addition to her book Grind Hopping, she was also co-author of the book Genius Denied, How to Stop Wasting Our Brightest Young Minds, and also co-author of The Healthy Guide to Unhealthy Living, How to Survive Your Bad Habits. A Princeton graduate who also studied abroad, Laura has thus a portfolio of newsroom reporting and freelance experiences, and loved to write about people who love their jobs. She was a 2006 recipient of a year-long journalism fellowship from the Phillips Foundation to study the political changes in the courts. Laura is a gifted singer, an active athlete, and as I mentioned, with her husband, Mike Conway, have two young sons and live in New York City. Well, here we go. The second book is 168 Hours. You Have More Time Than You Think. Talk to us about that, just doing the math, 168 hours, Laura.
Yes, well, you know, that's the number of hours in a week. Many of us say 24/7, and no one ever multiplies it through. Very few people know that there are 168 hours in a week, but I think that's a better way to think about our time, because, you know, Tuesdays and Saturdays happen just as frequently, so it's hard to say which is the more usual day for you, but if you think of the whole week, and that's usually the cycle that people live their lives in, you can start to see the true picture of your life.
And if anything, some of the patterns or things you're trapped in, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and one of the biggest patterns and traps people fall into is just thinking that there just isn't enough time to do the things that they want to do. The math I always do for people is that even if you're working 50 hours a week, which is more than most people actually work, and sleeping 8 hours a night, so that's 56 hours a week, that still leaves 62 hours for other things. And yet many people who are working 50 hours a week think that they just don't have time for a personal life. And so I challenge people to look at where those 62 hours actually go.
Well, and I think, you know, your important reason to do that, if you step back, is that time is the only resource that we can't go buy, inherit, or create. Right? You only have it once.
Same amount of time.
Right.
We all have 168 hours a week. So the question is, why do some people seem to do so much with it? And many of the rest of us kind of feel like we're grasping at spare minutes here and there.
So answer that question. How does that happen?
Well, that is actually one of the reasons I wrote this book.
You bet.
I wanted to find out why some people were able to do so much with their time. And so when I started writing it, I put out a call for people to tell me about people they knew who just seemed to manufacture time, right? Like, they had these great careers. They often had big, happy families. Many of them were doing things like running marathons, too. I mean, why not? And I wanted to learn their secrets. And so I interviewed many of them. And I found out that what they do is they focus on the things that they do best and only they can do. So those are things like nurturing their careers. No one else is going to take charge of your career for you. They nurture their families and close friends. I mean, no one else can be the kind of supportive parent or spouse that you can for those loved ones in your life. And they also nurture themselves. I mean, so they get enough sleep, they exercise, they engage in personal passions like volunteering. And so they focus on these three things, nurturing their careers, nurturing their families, nurturing themselves. And they basically ignore, minimize, or outsource absolutely everything else. They don't try to be busy with things that don't matter.
So tell us about that, though. That's a big one, is to minimize, ignore, or outsource.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you don't want to do something and it has to be done, I mean, or it doesn't have to be done, those are important things to ask yourself. You know, if it's something that makes you unhappy in your life, that's something that seems to be taking time away from things that you feel would be making you get somewhere in life,
mm-hmm.
then you have these three choices. Maybe it doesn't have to be done. Certainly there's a lot of housework, for instance, that we make for ourselves that may not necessarily need to happen. You know, there's ways that things can be minimized. If you feel like you're always, you know, driving your kids around to different activities, then you can try and see if there's a way that you could carpool, or maybe you
sure.
can consolidate some of the things they do or all that. Just looking at that as a way to minimize it. Or you can outsource it. You know, at work, many of us have to get our heads around the idea of delegating tasks that other people might be better suited for.
And love to do more than us.
Yes, or even at home, too, you know, that there are different things you can do that, you know, maybe you can get your groceries delivered, for instance, as a way to save time there. So just looking at all spheres of life and saying, well, if there's something I don't want to be doing or I'm not good at or makes, you know, life stressful or takes time that I should be doing other things with, how can I ignore it, minimize it, or outsource it?
So I think what you're saying, too, though, is this has to be very intentional and you have to make choices. I'm reminded of being in the place where you are now with two young ones. When my husband and I had two infants and us realizing, you know, our job right now is not to grow grass. So we're going to have a crummy-looking lawn and take the pressure from the neighbors here on, you know, in a quaint historic village in Connecticut. But you know what? We're going to grow our children instead.
And I think that's the way to do it, to keep your eyes very clear on what your priorities are. I mean, I'm doing this interview remotely. I'm at my house at the moment, and I am staring at a dust ball as we speak. But
and you're saying, okay, I'm going to let that dust ball be.
I'm going to let that dust ball go, and because right now I'm focusing on this, and I'm, you know, the time that I'm not working, I tend to be with my children. So, you know, we'll have a cleaner house later in life.
Well, you started the book out in your introduction kind of enticing the reader by explaining what was a good day that you went through. Why don't you power us through that thought of the idea of trying to extract and spend a high proportion of the things that really make a difference to you?
Yeah, and the day I talk about was July 14, 2009, which was a fairly pedestrian day, as it were. You know, there was nothing that was particularly spectacular about it. But the thing that made it good is that I spent almost all my hours on things that were related to my goals in life, to the things that I do best, and that other people maybe couldn't do as well. So I spent all my time either hanging out with my son, Jasper, who had just turned two at that time. I spent a lot of the time working on articles that were important to me and working on this book, in fact, which was also very important to me. That evening I led a meeting of the choir that I was the president of at the time. I'm still involved in the choir. And, you know, just guiding my board to think about how we were going to have our best season ever, and really focusing on that question. And so, you know, and then I came home and I spent 45 minutes talking with my husband, sort of talking about our projects and things like that. And there was really nothing else in the day. I mean, I spent my time doing those things that mattered to me, and were the main identities in my life. And when you do that over and over again, spending your hours on the things that matter most to you, you can't help but have good days. So even though this day was not particularly spectacular in the sense of, you know, I didn't get to do anything like meet the president, I mean, it was still a good day. And
I think the other side,
as many of those days as possible.
The one thing you commented in that day, which of course for any of us that are parents, you also think you've got a schedule plan, but you don't always get to execute to it. But nonetheless, you got to make the best of it. So you had a plan to take your son to the museum, Turns out the museum wasn't open, but my goodness, there's a museum by just standing on a street corner in Manhattan,
exactly.
Particularly for a two-year-old.
Well, good thing when you have a two-year-old, they don't need much to be entertained. And that's what you have to go with, too. I mean, it was certainly not a perfect day in the sense of everything going according to plan, but it was still a good day because we were hanging out together. We were, you know, doing intentional things together. We weren't just watching TV. And so that's what makes a good day.
You introduce the concept then in your book, and you walk us through some steps to be very, very intentional. You talk about, for example, starting with just logging your time to find out where you are, right?
Exactly. Many of us have absolutely no idea how we're spending our 168 hours. We may think we do. We know roughly when we work. We know roughly when we go to sleep. But there's a lot of other time that we just simply can't account for. And I'm sure many of your listeners have had this experience where you look at the clock suddenly on a weekday and it's 1 p.m. and you have no idea where the last, 4 or 5 hours
mm-hmm.
went. And so what I tell people to do is to keep a log of your time for at least 168 hours. That's 1 week. Going through, writing down what you're doing whenever you remember it, thinking of yourself kind of as a lawyer billing your time on these different projects. And it just helps you be intentional. It helps you recognize that the hours are going past, that the minutes are going past, and you have a choice of how to spend them. And once you have this log, you can also sit there and say, well, does this log match up with my priorities? Am I spending my time on activities that are the highest value at work, that are the highest value at home? And if not, what can I change to make my 168 hours look like the life I want?
And so then taking stock of, indeed, what might you like to replace some of this other dead time or non-productive or non-good time, you'd call it.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things I want to change people's mind about time with this book is that time management is really not just about saving 5 minutes here or there. I mean, there's all these tips out there about doing things like only doing your errands in the order where you can take right-hand turns. You don't have to wait for lights. I mean, okay, that's fine.
That's right.
But, that'll save maybe 5 minutes every week. a better question is, are you in the right job? Are you spending your time at home watching television, or are you spending it playing with your kids? Are you doing things with your leisure time that are meaningful to you, like volunteering or going to church or religious services mm-hmm. or reading fiction or something like that? Or are you just sort of spending it puttering around, flipping through catalogs or something else that you didn't necessarily mean to do? And so those are the bigger questions. And I tell people to really think about what they want their time to look like. I mean, what do you want to do during your 168 hours? What would you like to have more of in your life? And start by trying to put those things in first. And then you can ask the question of what else do you want to get off your plate? But really, time management isn't just about saving 5 minutes here and there. It's about filling your 168 hours with things that deserve to be there.
Well, in fact, you even say when you do end up with those 5 minutes, you call it fill the bits of time with bits of joy. So
exactly.
Take the opportunity for that, for your rest, relaxation, your giggle time, your laugh time.
Yeah, I mean, one of the problems we have in modern life is that much of our leisure time does come in pretty short spurts. The carpool is 20 minutes late bringing your kids home, for instance, or, you're at work and your next meeting doesn't start for another 15 minutes. What do you do with that time? I mean, if you look at that time, if you do start tracking your time, those little bits of time can add up. And so the question of how you fill them can really make a big difference in your quality of life. And I tell people to make a list of bits of time for bits of joy. What can you do in 30 minutes or less? What can you do in 10 minutes or less? And then every time you have one of these spots open up, you can do one of those things instead of just puttering around.
Or getting angry because you're stuck in traffic. Instead, shift your attention to, maybe I'll listen to a different station for these 10 minutes.
Exactly. Or listening to audiobooks in the car, that's great. I mean, if you have to commute, you may as well make the most of it. So,
yeah, that's right. You said, so you start people on this journey through your book about logging your time, creating your list of 100 dreams, you called it, right? The things you really would like to do.
Exactly.
And then coming back, though, and spending some time really identifying what your core competencies are. So do you mean the things that you're really good at and come to you easily when you say that, Laura?
Well, usually they are things that are not difficult for you per se, or if they're difficult, they're at least rewarding for you. And so for most people, you know, if you're in the right job, that's what I was talking about earlier with nurturing your career, nurturing your family, and nurturing yourself. Those are the things most of us do best, and more importantly, that other people cannot do. But yet there are other things that people can do. So, you know, for instance, if you have to bring, you know, something to your second graders' class party, you could bake something, you know, you could stay up late baking something, or you could just go buy something at a bakery, you know, and the bakery can make the snacks for you, but other people can't, you know, spend time talking with your child about their day and how it went and strategizing ways to deal with friend problems or school problems the same way you can. So
that's
those are
exactly
the things you should focus your time on and not on the other things.
Very good. For those of you who just may have joined us here on Circles of Change, my guest is Laura Vanderkam. We're talking about her second book, 168 Hours, You Have More Time Than You Think. Laura, you then recommend, so you identify those competencies, but then you start with a blank slate. So starting with a blank sheet of paper, you're saying, and trying to recraft what a few days might look like to build some muscle and then better living your days?
Exactly. I mean, the thing we have to recognize is that how we spend our time is a choice. We have our lives, we have the structures we've built, but that doesn't mean we can't choose to do things differently. And so the question is, do your 168 hours look like what you want them to look like? And there may be big consequences to doing things differently. I don't deny that, but it's still a choice. And when you recognize that, you put yourself more in charge of your time. And so I just ask people to think, well, what would my week look like if I could do whatever I want? You know, often people say, well, I'd take a vacation. Okay, but you can't take a vacation freely for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. So once you get past the, you know, I'd spend 3 weeks in Tahiti, what do you do after that? What would you really like your life on a weekly basis to look like? And then, you know, that gets people to start thinking about, well, how can I do work that challenges and excites me? How can I spend my time with my family in a way that brings all of us joy? And how can I nurture myself in a way that makes, you know, me happy and hopefully makes a difference in my community as well?
Well, I think you're also, though, this idea you said earlier of ignoring, minimizing, or outsourcing, it also takes some real guts sometimes to stop doing things that we otherwise, you know, have either succumbed to, trapped to, or even signed ourselves up for. Because many of that times is, you know, are we really good at saying no? I mean, most women, by the way, are not. So we'll take it all on. Just as much as, you know, you say this focus on career, family, and self, how many of us, I think both men and women, depending on the circumstances, don't invest in the self part. You know, it's sort of like when you get on airplanes and they advise in the case of an emergency and the masks come down, put yours on first and then put it on your child. And there's a reason for that, because you have got to be present to be able to help other people.
And that carries over into volunteering for too much. I mean, I certainly think that volunteering is a great use of one's 168 hours. But if you take on 10 different projects, you're really starving each of them of your time. Better to do one or two things and really throw yourself into them. I mean, go all in and really make a difference. And when you choose to do that, you really are saying yes to things. Whereas if you are taking on 10 projects, you're really saying a little no to each of them, even though you think you've said yes.
That's really true. But at the same time, though, I often caution people, though, don't get stuck in the tyranny of the or, because perhaps you can do the and in a way that allows some of these things to fuel one another or, you know, complement one another.
Sure. I mean, you know, you just have to look at if you're happy at how you're spending your time. And some people are happy doing many different things, and that's fine. You know, the question is if you're spending your 168 hours in a way that makes you happy.
I think it's interesting. You know, how is it you came to this realization that life is really lived in hours? Was it vis-a-vis the interviews you talked about or just reflection on your own journey?
It was both. I mean, the people I interviewed for my book are just so inspiring. I mean, many of them running huge businesses or divisions and corporations and having big families, too. And you know, they seem to not feel so harried about it. They didn't feel that busy, that overwhelmed. And the reason why is they really liked most of their hours. I mean, their jobs were things that they wanted to be doing. Their home life were things they wanted to be doing on the home front. They'd arranged things to be meaningful there as well. They had hobbies they enjoyed doing. So there wasn't a whole lot of stuff in their days that they didn't like that wasn't giving them energy. And when you feel that way, when everything you're doing is a source of energy rather than a source of stress, I mean, there's really no limit to what you can get done.
And in fact, you probably also sleep better because you know you've had a day full of joy.
Well, exactly. And I think that's what most of us need to learn from is like, well, what do we have in our lives? What do we have filling our hours that make our hours unhappy? And then we should look at how we can get rid of those things, if at all possible, or what we can change in our lives to make our hours be sources of joy.
And I think also you're certainly going to say, because I know your final point on the time makeover, as you call it, is to tune up as necessary. In other words, this is going to be a journey that even to figure out how to go from where my current portfolio is to the blank slate to the new one, but then also no conditions are going to change. Like I suspect fully when that second book, that second child came into your life as well, that different game. You're onto a different screen, right?
It was. And, you know, we've had to adjust to. I used to get more work done after my son Jasper went to bed because he would go to bed around 8:30 and then I could work for another 2 hours after he went to bed. So that meant I would usually knock off in the afternoon earlier so I'd have the time with him and then could work afterwards. Well, that kind of stopped, you know, when the baby was up later and then my 3-year-old Jasper stayed up later as well. So I had to respond by, you know, maybe working a little later in the afternoon, but then I'd also have the mornings with them. So you do have to make adjustments and make sure that you're allocating your time according to where you'd like it to be, that you're spending enough time with your kids, that you're investing in your career and still getting enough sleep and exercising and things like that. Yeah. And it's a constant tuning up process.
That's exactly right. Well, tell me, what have you been hearing from your readers so far? Because the book was just not released not long ago, right? May, in the end of May.
Yeah, I've been getting some great reader mail. Some of the most inspiring to me are people who are saying, "Yeah, this is really changing my life to think about my time in this way." I mean, I thought that maybe there wasn't enough time to invest in my career and invest in my personal life as well. But now that I've thought about it, now that I've logged my time, I can see that really I do have time. Mm-hmm. I do have time I didn't know I have. I have time with my kids in the morning, for instance. I have time in the weekends that I can use to trade off time with my spouse and go for a run. I have time during my lunch at work that I can go for a walk, or I can meet friends and actually nurture those relationships. And you know, especially I like to hear from new moms. I got an email from a new mom this week who said, "You know, everyone tells me that I won't have time for anything. You know, I won't have time to shower, let alone to sleep or hang out with my husband, or that my career is shot or anything like that." And I am so happy to read this book and hear from you that no, that doesn't have to be true.
That's right.
That there is enough time for anything that really matters to you. And when you focus on what is most important, you will be able to do all those things to have the life you want. You just have to stop being busy with things that don't matter. And that is so wonderful as an author to hear that from people, that you're changing lives.
It really is. I think the other piece of it, too, is to know that you've got a sounding board. I mean, that's, of course, the advent of the web and technology that you as an author can get this kind of feedback. Has anybody sent you a message with some other tricks of the trade that they use in this same field of time management that would be helpful?
Well, certainly. I hear from people about doing things like, certainly I'm not the only person to have come up with logging your time or thinking of what you would like to be doing with your time. Other people, try and set time without email, for instance, like go an hour. That seems impossible for some of us, but to really turn everything off for an hour and focus on the projects you need to get done, and then you can reward yourself with Facebook or email or Twitter or whatever you happen to be into. So that's the idea of focusing in a distracted world is one that comes up again and again.
The one I would also say, this idea to figure out what you don't have to do, is sometimes just stop doing it. And then realize if there's no feedback for lack of your having done it, it tells you it probably wasn't important. The classic thing in companies, of course, there was a day when everybody did weekly reports and send it in to the boss, etc. And so you try and say, let's all just not submit them and see if anybody even calls us as to where that report is. And you find out nobody called you.
Well, thinking, that's time you have back.
That's exactly right.
Other things.
Well, great. Well, Laura Vanderkam again, second time in. I can't tell folks enough that both her first book, Grind Hopping, had a significant impact on me. In fact, it was from one of your conversations in that book, Laura, that I crafted and picked up on that message about how our paths are created by our walking on it. So now I'm going to have to think about 168 hours. You have more time than you think to see how it's going to impact our journey here on this radio show. So thanks again for joining us here today from New York.
Thank you for having
me. Great. All the best. Take care. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.